Mr. Watson, Reel 5. We're talking about when you were with the tank delivery squadron at Brandon. We were looking at the Cromwell tank, Crusader tank.
Crusader.
Yeah, of course. And you mentioned what the crew did, but in a bit more detail, what did each member of the crew do, or what was their role in the crew, and what did you do at that time?
The driver sat on the right-hand side, in other words, in the traditional English fashion, and he drove the tank. It had, as I've already said, a Supermarine V12-cylinder engine. Of course, it was an extremely powerful engine, and it could drive the Crusader tank at fairly high speeds. It had a clash-type gearbox, in other words, not the synchronous gearbox, where one had to engage double big clutching the whole time to change gears. As I've already explained about the gear cables, the gearbox and the engine were in the rear of the tank, obviously for protection from forward fire, but they were operated by cables, Bowden cables. But of course, what used to happen, the cables, if the driver was a bit hand-fisted, the cables used to stretch, and one could engage gear nominally in the front of the tank, but the gears in the rear of the tank would not be engaged, which led sometimes to all sorts of consternation. The crew commander obviously had his head poking out of the top and used to stand generally in the tank, although he did have a seat. He used to tell the driver what to do via the 19 set in the intercom, and of course he used to also change from intercom to radio. The wireless operator should be self-explanatory. He was purely the wireless operator, and he assisted the crew commander, and he dealt with any messages that had to be relayed either to troop on the ultra-high frequency or to regiment on the ordinary shortwave frequency, the 19 set having three functions, intercom, regimental net in the shortwave frequency, and troop net on the ultra-high frequency. And the gunner was obviously responsible for gunnery. He took his orders from the crew commander. And that completes the crew of the Crusader tank.
Now, what were you doing while you were at Brandon?
We, at Brandon, and when we went up to Bridlington, we were engaged in training, driving around the countryside, gunnery practice, map reading, which was very essential for all concerned, radio communication. But of course, being in a small unit, we didn't have the practice of engaging as a regiment would on a regimental net. There were probably only 10 or a dozen tanks belonging to each part of the tank delivery squadron. The tank delivery squadron replicated the brigade. In other words, there were members of the 3rd Royal Tank Regiment, the Royal Hussars and the 504th Yeomanry, in small numbers in each part of the tank delivery squadron. So, as I say, we didn't have the experience of working with the regiment. When we used to go on divisional or corps exercises, but we were still only used as a reinforcement unit. We never used to engage in the major contribution of things. We wore, obviously, each member of the tank delivery squadron wore the badges of the regiments to which they were attached. That's all I think I can say about the tank delivery squadron or forward delivery squadron. It's various names. It changed, I think, three times.
How long were you at Brandon?
I think we were at Brandon for roughly 6 months. I'm not sure about that. We then transferred up to the Yorkshire Wolves, East Yorkshire.
Would that be at the same time as the Fife and Forfars went to Bridlington?
The Fife and Forfar Yeomanry were at Chippenham, which is not far from Brandon. And we obviously followed them around. When they were there for their wings, I was with the regiment, but I was then transferred to the reinforcement unit. We were then at Brandon, and we were then transferred up to North Yorkshire, or the Yorkshire Wolves.
That would be around about June 1943 then?
Yes, that's right. That would make it about 6 months. I think we went from perhaps 8 months. I think we moved from Bury St Edmunds because we were only in tents in Bury St Edmunds, although the regimental history says that the regiment were in Hutton quarters. They may well have been, but I definitely was only in a tent, and I was only in Bury St Edmunds for probably 3 or 4 weeks. Then we went up to Brandon, where we had hutted accommodation, and if we went up in June, obviously we were at Brandon for probably 8 months. And then we went up to the Yorkshire Wolds.
Now, where did you go in Yorkshire?
Whereas I think the regiment was stationed in Bridlington itself, we were stationed in a small village outside Bridlington, 8 miles from Bridlington, up in the Wolds themselves, what would have been a country village with one pub, no shops, and I think there was no nappy there, obviously, but we had a WVS canteen, and we were then in Nissen Huts.
Now, where was that? Is that North Burton?
North Burton, yeah. But I think it's renamed as Burton Fleming now, I'm not sure. I have been back there since the war, but I didn't recognise the place at all.
And what was life like there?
Fairly hard. The weather wasn't particularly good, and we spent the winter there. I can remember one instance when we went swimming at Filey, which had originally before the war been a Butlin's holiday camp. It was then occupied by the Royal Air Force Regiment, and most of the coast was obviously still a non-permitted area. But we were able to go swimming at Filey, and there was one member of the regiment who was one member of the holding unit, he was an extremely scrappy blighter, and when he ran down the beach, his feet, the bottoms of his feet, were absolutely black. His name was Painter. Thereafter, he was known as Darky Painter. I can remember going swimming there, but the sea was so cold, and the wind off the North Sea was so cold, the whole summer, in fact, was cold, that nobody really enjoyed the swimming. I remember we had a wrestling match on the beach there. There was another tall member of our holding unit, a gentleman called Garner, who was subsequently killed when we crossed the bridge at Aston in Holland. Him and I had a wrestling match, and he complained afterwards about his chest hurting. In a subsequent x-ray, it was found he cracked 3 ribs. I told him, I'm sorry, I never knew I was that strong. But we had lots of physical exercise. We also used to do machine gun and Bren gun training off the cliffs at Flamborough Head when a poor gentleman in I think it was a Gloucester Gladiator, used to tow a target along at cliff level, and we used to shoot at the target, or most people shot at the target. I think that it was an extremely long drag with this chap, and I don't blame him at all, because it's not a job I would have wished to have had. We had no real large tank gun training. We subsequently went to Kukubri for that. But we used to do a lot of training around in what were corn or barley fields. And in the Yorkshire Wolds, there are a lot of pits in the ground. Whether they were chalk pits formed for the extraction of chalk or building stone, or whether they were naturally occurring pits, I do not know. But it was fairly hazardous as far as the tank drivers were concerned. They could not see much above the level of the tall barley or wheat. And the crew commanders had to spot these pits because they were not fenced off. And I think more than one tank ended up at the bottom of these pits. We were lucky, none of ours did.
Now, what about the Shermans? While you were there, you'd get the Shermans, would you? Or would you?
I don't think, in fact, I'm certain that we never received, as the tank delivery squadron, never received Shermans until later on. We did have them later on, but by that time we weren't in North Burton. We then moved down and we slept in houses in Bridlington itself. But we didn't have the Shermans while we were at North Burton. We had the Shermans. Don't forget, we were the reinforcement unit. We used to get everything after the regiment was fully equipped. But we did have Shermans. We definitely had Shermans when we were in Bridlington, because I can remember when George the Sixth came along to review us, we had Shermans in the streets at Bridlington.
What do you remember of that inspection?
The King looked very fed up, and the Queen was smiling as usual. Various reasons were advanced by the ribald members of the unit as to why the King was fed up, which I won't go now. But it was a fairly cursory inspection. He had to drive down the street and we stood outside our tank and wave our berries in the air. But it didn't last very long.
Now, what about... Carry on.
Obviously, there was a lot of preparation for it, sometimes called bullshit.
Now, what about the Sherman? Could you, like you did with the Crusader, could you describe the characteristics of the Sherman and what everyone in that crew did? It's pretty much the same, I suspect.
After the Crusader, I found the Sherman to be an absolute anti-climax. Whilst, obviously, it was produced in much larger quantities than the British could produce, it had the following drawbacks. Its 75mm gun was not very good. The sight for the gun was a thing called a peritelescope and was absolutely useless. But the biggest drawback of the Sherman, in my opinion, was that it had a synchromesh gearbox. Now, with a synchromesh gearbox, one has to put the gears into neutral, wait a second or two and for the synchromesh gears to engage, and then put the gear lever into the gear you are choosing. Now, on cross country, that of course had the big drawback of that half a second or second or so, you were losing a lot of ground speed over the rough terrain. It was a big drawback compared with the Crusader, where by double declutching one could engage the gears instantaneously. The other thing about the Sherman, it was obviously equipped with our 19 set, so the radio side of it wasn't bad. The other thing about it was that it had been designed originally for the Western Desert. And the brain boxes who designed it had said, right, we don't want the sand going into the air take of the engine, so if we get the sand to go through the turret, the sand will then be clean and it will also at the same time cool the crew, very, very sensible idea for the Western Desert, but not much good for Europe, where A, there was no sand, and B, one didn't generally need cooling. The armour of the Sherman, on the other hand, was quite good front ways, but it was so thin on the sides, particularly around the stores for the ammunition, that before we went into action, reinforcements of extra thick armour plate were welded on outside the ammunition bays. I think the German 88mm used to pinpoint these extra thicknesses of armour plate because it was no worry to them to go through the extra thickness. It just gave them a pinpoint as to where the ammunition was.
What about the different engines and speed and reliability of the...
The other thing was the Shermans we had, I do believe that there were Shermans with alternative engines, but our regiment was never equipped with them. They had a radial engine which comprised 5 6-cylinder General Motors, what had originally been lorry engine, driving onto a central prop shaft. Now, this gave one the big disadvantage of having 5 distributors, we're in the days before electronic ignition, 5 distributors and 30 plugs, all of which, of course, could go wrong. There was a bonus to the tank in that the battery did have a little Dixon Stratton, an engine for recharging the batteries, which of course, if the tank was stationary and one was using the radio a lot, the batteries could tend to go down. They could be topped up by use of this tiny Dixon Stratton engine. I think there was more room in Sherman, but on the other hand, it was more apparent because it was a much taller tank.
Did you know at that time in England about the reputation for catching fire, if they were hit by anything?
Well, we were told at our training depot at Farnborough, when we went to Farnborough, about tanks brewing up. The instructors we had, most of them had had experience in the Western Desert, and they were fully conscious of the fact that tanks brewed up. Obviously, they didn't tell us of the catastrophic circumstances that sometimes happen when the tanks brewed up. But we were fully conscious of the fact that tanks were...
What about the Sherman in particular, though, was liable to? Did you know that at the time? Or was it just...
The Sherman, of course, had high-octane... petrol. I think all of the tanks had high octane petrol. The other ones did because the other aero engines in the Crusaders were designed for high octane petrol. And we all realised that petrol was very, very inflammable. I don't say that anybody played on the point, but anybody with a grain of common sense and know how inflammable petrol is would have assumed that that was the case. They must have realised. They must have either dulled their own senses or been just not thought about it. But I was fully conscious of the fact that they were.
Now, what was your job in? Because the crew was there was a 5-man crew on not on the Firefly, but on the normal Sherman.
Yeah,
but
what I acted as crew commander.
That was your normal job. What did the extra man do
in addition to the normal driver, radio operator and gunner, there was a gentleman called a co-driver who used to sit on the left-hand side of the tank. I don't know whether they had dual controls or not. I rather fancy they may well have done. I didn't have a lot to do with shoes because I'd also... trained as a scout car driver.
I'll come back. What did the co-driver do then? I mean, did they...
Well, the co-driver had a machine gun in front of him, and he was responsible for that machine gun. a Browning 0.5.
Now, did you go to, you did go, you mentioned, to Kirkcudbright during that...
Yes, we went up to
Kirkcudbright. Now, was that when you were still on Sherman's, or had you switched to Armoured Car?
That was when we were on Sherman's.
What do you remember of that?
Mad. we went up to Kirkcudbright on a train, and out of interest, I spent the whole of my 21st birthday on a train going to Kirkcudbright. I can remember to this day that our packed rations were pilchered in tomato sauce with bread. Kirkcudbright was extremely wet and muddy. The whole of the area was transformed into mud. I can remember seeing what had originally been a green hill, which was a completely brown hill because the tanks had churned every vestige of grass away. We used the fire out to sea, the artillery, and this is when we really found that the sights of the Sherman were useless. And in fact, I think...
In what way?
Well, in being inaccurate, the... Perry telescope was a very, very difficult thing to operate, and it was very difficult for the gunners to achieve many hits. I think that the hierarchy realised this and they asked for these Perry telescopes to be exchanged for our normal sites which we had in the Crusaders, and also at the same time they started giving, I think, one tank in every troop, fitting it with a 17-pounder gun, that's an English gun, instead of the 75mm.
That's the Firefly variant.
They called them Fireflies, yeah. But they, of course, had a much more accurate sight, and of course a much better gun, especially with the armour piercing shells.
Did you ever go on a Sherman Firefly? Or
no, I never trained on a Firefly.
Well, anything else for your time at Kirkcudbright?
No, not really. I had a good argument with an officer about map reading, and he was wrong in the end, and he came up and confessed to me. He looked at a peninsula jutting out, and I said it was one, and he said it was another. And I said, I'm sorry, sir. Eventually, the following day, he came up to me and said, Watson, you were right. Congratulations. But I dug my heels in over that. The village of Kirkcudbright, or town, I suppose the Scots would have called it, was not very interesting, but the whole visit to Kirkcudbright was sullied by the fact that the weather was wet.
Now, then after that, back to...
back to Bridlington.
Anything
else? When I was at Bridlington, as I said, I did do a lot of driving of what were then called Dingoes, which were the Danish scout car. Now, subsequently, our regiment was equipped with Humber scout cars. The Daimler scout car was a shorter scout car which had five forward gears.
This is the Dingo.
The Dingo. A pre-selector gearbox, five-speed pre-selector gearbox, and a change lever where one could reverse the five-speed gearbox so that, in fact, one had five speeds in reverse. And I drove the Dingoes quite a lot. On one occasion, we had an accident in a Dingo. There was a sergeant in our unit who had come from Wales. He'd originally been a policeman in Wales. He had a gentleman who could drink a pint of beer without moving his epiglottis straight down. He said he learned it in Wales when the sergeant, the police was coming round, and he had to down a pint quickly when he shouldn't have been in the pub. Anyway, he said, "Oh, I'll have a drive of this dingo, Charlie." I was never called Ken by the name, and I was always called Charlie. I said, "All right." I said, "But be careful on the bends." And he promptly drove it at excessive speed, went round the bend. The dingo left the road. Luckily for us, because they were notorious for decapitating people by overturning, there was a large oak tree at the side of the road. And the dingo hit the oak tree sideways. I think it wrote the dingo off. And obviously, there was a call to inquiry, and they wanted to know why I wasn't driving. And I said I was acting under instructions from the sergeant. And I got away with it thus, but of course I shouldn't have been driving, and I should have curved his speed a bit, probably, but I didn't expect the idiot to go round the corner at excessive speed.
What was the crew in the dingo?
There was just the two. The driver and the crew commander who was generally an officer.
What gun did it have, or weapon?
It had no fixed weapons, none at all. No fixed weapons. You were equipped with rifle, machine gun, varied pistol, or beam gun, smoke, all the usual small arms equipment.
What did you think of the dingo?
I think the Dana Scout cars were a brilliant scout car. They were adaptable, they would reverse quickly, they had enough armour plate to deter machine gun bullets. They had a good engine. They were fast, very, very manoeuvrable, very adaptable. The ones we had, incidentally, had the two-wheel steering. There were dingoes with four-wheel steering, but I think they discontinued that because people used to turn them over too easily. The other thing about them, too, some of them were equipped with sorbow filled tyres, so that if the tyres were shot up with machine guns, but one didn't have flat tyres, they called them run flats.
And how long were you on this for, the dingo?
Well, I alternated between acting as a crew commander and driving a dingo.
Crew commander on a Sherman?
On a Sherman, yeah. You see, in the reinforcement unit, one had to be adaptable because one never knew what role would be assigned to you later on.
And anything else happened before the move to Aldershot? Oh, did you go to Aldershot with the rest?
Sure
we did.
No, I can't think of anything of any significance. We used to, Bridlington was quite a pleasant place to be stationed. There used to be cinemas. I can remember seeing Fantasia there for the first time in my life.
Did you go?
Strange fish from the fishermen.
Did you go to
home on leave?
Did you go to the pubs much?
To the
pubs much?
I was a teetotaler at that time. I'll tell you a story about that later on.
And how did you get on with the locals?
Very well. Oh, I can remember one incident, which is perhaps a bit humorous. We used to have a chap in our regiment who was in a printer. His name was Skelton. And whenever he saw a dog, he used to swear and curse at this dog and say, "You black-looking mongrel," and like that. We were walking down the road one day, and I was behind this chap, Skelton, who had a friend with him, and he saw a dog down an alleyway, a back access to some houses, and he shouted out to this dog, "You scurvy-looking mongrel," and this dog rushed up the alleyway and bit the chap he was walking with, much to his consternation. Skelton, nevertheless, never mended his ways, and he carried on thereafter swearing at all dogs he saw. I don't know whether he had a complex about dogs and been bitten early on in life, but he certainly used to annoy him. I can't remember much else. Oh, I can remember another thing. We were stationed in Bridlington in the middle of winter,